everybody, welcome to the podcast, Guys Learning Japanese. How's it going, Nick?
Good, how are you?
I'm all right. Do you remember that podcast we did a few weeks ago about kanji?
Yeah.
I think in that podcast we were a little negative. It seemed kind of like a rant. Even though I like kanji, and I get the impression that you like kanji too.
Yeah, I do.
But overall, that podcast seemed a little negative. So this time, let's talk about what has helped us to learn kanji, or how did we become proficient in kanji, even though it is still a work in progress. Let's give our suggestions and our tips about how to learn kanji.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay, so you're probably a little better than me at reading and writing, or the reading of kanji,
yeah,
and really. The writing of it. So how about you start out?
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, as for kanji, I was struggling with kanji, for many years, and it was always something that I put off and put into the back of my mind, until just before I came to Japan, I started doing a lot of online research, and over and over and over again, I was introduced to the book Reviewing the Kanji, or rather, Remembering the Kanji. Remembering the Kanji by Heisig. And so I got my hands on that book, and then I was loving that book. I was absolutely loving that book and just how it broke it down really simply. For those who don't know, the book essentially breaks apart the kanji into its constituent elements, and then it assigns a keyword or a key meaning to each one of those elements, and then it introduces each one of those elements individually, and it only puts kanji in an order of elements that you already know, in its sort of parts or radicals, as they're called, or that you already know. And so what happens is it sort of slowly builds up your knowledge of the kanji using only pieces that you know. And so it might be that on one side you have the radical for, say, person, and then at the top, on the left-hand side, you've got the radical for person. On the right side, you've got at the top, say, the radical for, grass or whatever it might be. And then through that, you can create your own stories. And Heisig creates stories, for the reader.
So these stories are mnemonics for remembering the meaning of the kanji?
Yeah, the meaning only. And, you can also, practice stroke order from it as well. You can't learn any onyomi, any readings of any of the kanji from, at least from his first book, Remembering the Kanji. But it teaches you the meanings, which doesn't feel like much, but it actually can help you a lot, I think, knowing the meaning of the kanji. Because often the meaning makes the kanji, when it's in a compound form, just make a lot more sense. Yeah. Even today, for example, I was talking to you about a website where you could look up train timetables. The website's called Ekitan. And Eki means station, and then Tan is an onyomi reading for search. And so, it just couldn't be any more simple. When you see the two kanji next to each other, you've got one which means, its meaning is station, and the next kanji, which reading is tan, it means search. So station search. It's pretty easy to figure out what that website's all about. And then knowing the meaning in ways like that can be very, very useful. And so anyway, I started studying that. And then I was disappointed and lost and confused after about maybe the first 250, when it might be more than that, I don't quite remember, but Heisig's stories basically stop, or they drop off, and he essentially tells you, oh, it's time for you to start making your own stories. And then so I didn't want to make my own stories, so I tried for a little while and didn't like it. And so I found the amazing website reviewing the kanji. Yeah, and then I think it also has another name. It's something about, what is it? Kanji Kohi or something?
Yeah, Kanji Kohi.
And then, so I went onto that website and started using its amazing services, which it offers free, unbelievably. And I've subsequently learned about another website which does a similar thing called Kanji Damage. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
It does the same thing, or it does a similar thing, although it uses maybe more different radicals than what... you know, I think reviewing the kanji tends to use, or not always, but it tends to use a lot of heisei radicals, the same meaning. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think Kanji Damage just goes out and just uses its own ones. I might be wrong on that, but... And then it also teaches onyomi. Kanji Damage also teaches onyomi. And I think Kanji Damage is maybe a bit more lewd and a bit ruder and things like that. But in any case, I actually only learnt about that much more recently, after I'd already studied all the kanji. But yeah, so I started using that website, and then it was helping me fill in the gaps with the rest of the kanji, as in the bulk of the kanji. And so I owe much of, obviously, to my own hard work in remembering them. But I owe a certain amount of my hard work to, you know, to that website. It really helped me along. How did you do it?
Well, I started learning kanji the same as any other student of Japanese in a classroom. Like, I think most teachers, they'll follow the order that they teach Japanese students in school, like in the elementary first grade.
Yeah.
So I started out like that, and just there were some kanji that were really, really easy, and there were some that were so hard. If you consider like the stroke order, like some of them were just on another level. Some would be, you know, two or three strokes, but others would be like up to 20 strokes. Yeah. And I had a lot of trouble with that at the beginning, so... I tried not to put too much emphasis on kanji. I put more of an emphasis on kanji recognition, like being able to recognize the reading of it and the meaning of it, but I never really bothered too much with how to write it. I only came across... So basically that happened for about maybe 6 years, that attitude. Just occasionally studying kanji, not too much how to write, but... always putting heavy emphasis on recognition and vocab. Yeah. That's basically how I learned kanji. I never really practiced like some students of Japanese where they just take out a sheet of loose leaf and they just write the same kanji 100 times over and over. I never really saw any meaning in that.
No.
But I came across heisei after probably about my 6th or 7th year of learning Japanese. And I kind of wish I would have been exposed to it a bit earlier. Because the best thing about heisei, I think, is the order that he introduces the kanji.
Yeah.
It's really, really useful. And how he breaks it down. You go from simple to complicated. And...
yeah.
I think that's definitely the best way to go. It doesn't really happen like that with the traditional order that they teach Japanese students in school.
Yeah, they teach it pretty much from sort of most useful to least useful, so to speak, don't they?
Yeah, I guess you could say that, but there are kanji that you only use in one situation. Like you may never use it in any situation other than this word.
Yeah.
But there are other kanji that would be much, much more easy to learn in terms of reading and writing, but the concept is a little more abstract. So I guess that's why they didn't introduce it in, the first grade of elementary school, because some of the ideas of these kanji They're too abstract. But if you're an adult learning Japanese, that's not helpful at all.
No, that's right.
So.
Yeah, so as for studying, you know, getting back onto the topic of actually studying the thing, studying the mountain.
Yeah.
So I went through, you know, just through going through HASIC, and I completed that after, say, a year and a few months. I'd originally set out to do it in 6 or something. Mm-hmm. and then just do it in a year, and I didn't even make that. And when I passed the finish line, it was a strange feeling. It was a strange feeling. And then I said to myself, like, I'm gonna go out and get some like sushi or something, you know, get some really nice quality sushi. And then for whatever reason, I ended up getting not, you know, nice quality restaurant sushi. I ended up getting basically sushi from a supermarket.
And it left you with a sour taste.
Yeah, and it wasn't great. And that's, I'm sitting awesome. There and you know, like, there's the there's something super sad. In Japan, you know, sushi often comes in these plastic packets. And then, you know, you eat the sushi, and then you're just left with those, you know, those kind of plastic looking, it almost looks like grass, but it's made of plastic. You're left with that plastic grass stuff. You're left with the little soy sauce things, you know, with the little fish soy sauce packets.
Yeah.
And then it's just, you've got this empty container, this plastic container. And then if you didn't eat all the sushi, it's just kind of like, it looks like It somehow looks gross when you finish the meal and you've got a full belly, and it's just kind of, you know, laying out there on its own amongst, like, you know, amongst kind of, you know, the droppings of some other sushi that you've already eaten. And then it's just a sad sight. And I remember looking at that and thinking, that's my congratulations. Yeah. After all that work, after all that, I have subpar sushi.
Yeah,
and then and I couldn't read the sushi kanji. I remember thinking that too, because the sushi kanji is not part of the Joyo kanji list, which is what I studied.
Right,
and so I couldn't read the kanji for sushi.
Irony.
Anyway, so I
Have you ever thought of taking the kanken?
The kanken? I don't even know what it is. What is that?
The kanken is a kanji kente, like, it's an exam for your kanji ability. It's not meant for foreigners, it's meant for, like, Japanese people who grew up in the Japanese education system.
Yeah, I have heard of that, actually. Yeah, you just jog my memory.
I can't remember what level it starts at. I think it's like 10th Q or like 9th Q, and it goes up to the first Q.
Yeah.
And I think, like, very, very few Japanese people have the first Q. Like, even the people who do study for it, I think it's a very elite demographic. Like, you're in the top percentile. Yeah. Even the second Q, like, Nikyu, is pretty elite.
I think, is that, when you get into Ikkyu, there's in the first grade, what's the emphasis there? Is it on, like, things like Buddhist terminology and things like that? Is that the sort of territory you're heading into?
Yeah, basically you're venturing into the kanji that people don't use anymore. Or it's like what is the historical kanji of this modern kanji?
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah. So it's not really practical for everyday life, but it may be something for you if you're really into kanji.
Yeah.
They also, well, I actually I have the kanken game on DS. I could lend it to you if you're interested.
I'm not. I just I love kanji, don't get me wrong, but I don't care to be elite at it, to tell you the truth. I just want to be functional.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think being elite at it is just, you know, that's like a whole nother thing. You have to be just really into kanji.
Yeah.
I'm not done with kanji, but, you know, the sooner the better, really. you know, I can be kind of rid of it, or I can be rid of a lot, you know, most of my study, because I still study kanji.
How do you do it now?
Well, I don't study, you know, reviewing the kanji or remembering the kanji anymore. I study just onyomi now. I'm about maybe 3/4 of the way through inputting all of the kanji and all of their associated onyomi and creating a mnemonic for each. I'm making an Anki deck. I'm in the process of making one at the moment, and it's taken a while. It's taken probably maybe 8 months so far, and but I remember them a lot better than what I did when I was first studying the meaning, because I know the kanji now. I can kind of recognize it. Also, I just know more Japanese, so I know the way it's used, and I know in most cases I know the meaning of the kanji too. And so I can go through that way, and maybe I also have less information to remember. So I just have to remember, say, like one sound, like it might just be, or it might just be cure, or it might just be hyo, something like that. And so anyway, I'm going through and creating stories for each one of those. That's fun. It's fun to do. There's I've heard of different the way that I came up with that. You know, was just through searching the net, and I stumbled upon a bunch of different ideas of how to study kanji. One of them was this called the movie method. I think it's anyone who's studying Japanese and they want to learn a good way to study onyomi, I highly recommend they, you know, search kanji movie method. And there's a bunch of good blogs which basically introduce this idea that I might be wrong on the particulars, but you basically assign, a lot of kanji have the same onyomi. So sometimes if it's a particularly common onyomi, like kyo, for instance, there will be upwards of maybe like 30 kanji, which all have the onyomi kyo. And so you take that one, and then you might assign a movie to that. And sometimes the movie can relate to that reading in some way. So maybe the movie has a cure sounding title. You know, something in the title which sounds like cure. And then maybe it's a movie about Kyoto, for instance. You know, it could be like in, say, Lost in Translation. Just thinking off the top of my head, Scarlett Johansson's character travels to Kyoto during that movie. So you might base all the cure kanji off Lost in Translation through that association. And then you take all of the kanji which have the onyomi kyo. So, for instance, the kanji for education or teaching has the onyomi kyo. And so, what you do, for instance, is you'd associate Lost in Translation with the idea of teaching. And so, what you would then do is you would take, Lost in Translation. There's a scene where Scarlett Johansson is being taught Ikebana inside the hotel from a lady. And so there you go. You've created the association between the idea of teaching and the movie Lost in Translation. And so probably it's probably unlikely that even just by me telling that story just then, it's going to be unlikely that you're going to forget the reading the cure has some association with teaching now. And so it works in that way, because you create a visual association, which is far more vivid than I think just trying to memorize lines on a page. You know, like if you're just writing out the kanji over and over and over and over again. And then, so that's the movie method, and then that's also joined to this idea of the palace, or it's called something to do with that, with a palace. Anyway, what that is that you assign a location and you vividly in your mind, spatially and whatnot, you sort of really figure out this location. So if you take, for instance, your apartment, or your house or wherever you happen to live, and then you vividly imagine it in your mind, and then you associate different kanji as though you're almost literally sticking kanji on particular areas in your mind. So for instance, in the kitchen, you open up the drawer and inside the drawer is this kanji. And then you imagine that in your mind's eye. I've never actually tried it, and so my description might be wrong of the way that it works. I've never tried it, but it's believed that's how people often study things like how to memorize a deck of cards, like the exact in their exact order. So basically, someone will shuffle a deck of cards, and then they'll basically give the deck of cards to someone, and then the person has to look over the deck of cards, look at each card, and then they've got maybe, you know, like a minute, and then they basically have to, you know, say all of the deck of, they have to say it in the correct order back to the person. And they develop and they train a part of their brain where they can basically, like, spatially allocate the order of the cards around, like, say, in a room that they've essentially invented in their head. And I think if you can, just imagining a house is kind of boring. I always thought that if you can, you know, if you can do it with imagery that's very, very strange, then it's going to stick even more. Of course, that's not going to work in, like, your speed reading of cards, but when you're studying kanji, if you can imagine, for example, you know, that inside the room there is a monster that's yelling at you and throwing cakes in your face, then basically that'd be an image that will stick more readily, and so you can associate more kanji with that monster. And so that's essentially what the movie method is. The movie method is essentially making something which is memorable to you. It's no good using a movie you've never seen, but, you know, a movie which is memorable to you, because it's in your mind, and, you know, it's easy to associate better in that way.
It's a lot better than the method that I use, I think, because basically what I do is I just occasionally buy vocabulary books, like Japanese N1, JLPT N1 vocabulary books, and I just add the vocabulary that I don't know into an Anki deck, and then I just review that vocab, and I read a lot. And whenever I come across words that I don't know, I add those words to an Anki deck.
Yeah.
That's all I do now. I just add vocab to Anki. Usually just the meaning, whether in Japanese or in English, sometimes with an example sentence. And then I just review that. How about time of day or place? Is there a good place for you to study? For me personally, I like to study early in the morning. The earlier the better. So, like, ideally, just after I wake up, before I even have breakfast, I like to do a bit of Anki. And if I do about 30 minutes of that, usually my mind is really sharp and I feel really good. And it tends to stick with me a lot better than in comparison to if I did, like, you know, 30 minutes of Anki at the end of the day, like just before bed or after a long day of work, because that's just a waste of time for me.
I think that, but probably most businesses in Australia open at 9 o'clock in the morning. And so growing up, I remember, you know, when I'd wake up early, the idea of just thinking that who wakes up before 9 o'clock? You know, like when I was young, I was just, you know, when I was a teenager, I'd just wake up at 10, 11, 12, whatever. And then I always just think, you know, who can wake up so that they can be at work by 9 o'clock? And I just think that's just incredible that people used to be able to do that every day. I mean, I just would have been a bad employee. And then, to me, I still have a bit of a guilty pleasure because I wake up really early now. I wake up at about 6 o'clock. And so when I wake up and then I start studying, normally I have breakfast straight away, but I'll have breakfast and after that I'll start studying from, say, you know, it might be 7. So the hours from 7 till 9 o'clock, I can normally get a lot of the work done that I wanted to get done. And it really feels great. It feels like, and now the day's only just begun. I mean, people are only just arriving at work now. And I've still got this whole day left, and it just feels really great. I only draw that imagery of people starting work because that's honestly the way I think about it. I just think that, you know, I've getting all this work done and it's only 8:30. People haven't even arrived at work yet. I mean, how great is that? How awesome. And so, to answer your question, I really like working in the morning because it gives me a kick. It gives me a nice feeling that I'm getting good, solid work done, and you know, I just happen to be able to concentrate more normally.
Same.
Yeah. I can't work, you know, towards the end of the day. It just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As for other methods for kanji, my exact thing that I did, I don't want to go on about it too much, but I only told really half the story of talking about the movie method and the palace idea. Essentially, all I did when I was creating my deck was as opposed to just limiting it to movies, I just limited it to whatever came into my mind. So sometimes it would be an invented character, which I'd loosely base off some concept. And then sometimes it would be a character from a movie. Sometimes it would be just a word. Sometimes it would be a concept of nature, you know, or something like that. And so, I'd sometimes it's a movie. Sometimes it would be a whatever. And so I just not base it off all different things. And so I've found that on the worst days, the process I'm going through to learn on Yomi is a drag, just like everything else. But more frequently, it's actually pretty fun. Because if I don't remember the kanji, I can go down to the description, and it's normally lewd, it's normally ridiculous, it's normally really rude or in some way, you know, insensitive towards someone. And so I just, I get a kick from it. It makes me laugh normally.
Laughing at the misfortune of others.
Yeah, well, just laughing at just how the way that I'm remembering this kanji. I mean, Japanese people would be shocked to know the horrible things that I am doing to their language to learn it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Any advice for people who are frustrated with learning kanji? People who just hit a roadblock or something? People who just want to quit learning the language because they're sick of trying to learn kanji?
So I think that advice would just be really seriously consider. It doesn't matter if you take a couple of days off, you know, try not to beat yourself up about it, but to really seriously consider the trying to think about it in a different way. Try and think about how you can learn the kanji in a different way, and if possible, to tap into something in your sort of more visual, brain area. You know, sort of try and create a story which has a vivid imagery. Or hell, just if you're going to be practicing writing kanji and you can't be bothered doing it anymore, buy a box of crayons and do it in crayons and do it in different colors. Or buy a big scrapbook and then, you know, color the kanji that you like in green and color the kanji you don't like in blue. And then, you know, if draw a picture for each one. Anything that will basically take you out of the... Normally, it's not necessarily the hardness, because, like, you know, kanji is hard, but it's only hard because it's monotonous. So something that can basically take you out of the monotony of it all, I think that would, mix it up. I think that's a... I'm not advocating crayons necessarily. I'm just advocating that you just... try and think of, devise new ways to approach it.
That's a good point. My point would be if you really don't want to learn how to write the kanji, focus a lot on vocabulary, and hopefully you can make up for it like that. But you're going to have to learn the kanji either way. It's just what I'm saying here by learning more vocab. It's just a workaround. It's going to improve your Japanese, and you're going to be a little more comfortable when you're reading materials, but you're going to have to pick it up at some point. It's just when you do it. I think the earlier you do it, the more fluency you gain at an early level, the easier it's going to be for you to learn Japanese. So you might as well invest the time at the beginning.
And we're not talking as people from ultimate authority on it. I mean, we're still studying this stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's still plenty of signs on trains I don't understand, especially when it comes to place names and people's names. I got no clue. And so the, yeah, it just keeps on going, but so far, the advice that I can give you is pretty much everything that I've said this podcast.
Yeah, and if you haven't mastered kanji in 10 years, don't worry, neither have Japanese people.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a good way to think about it, yeah.
Yeah, I expect to invest like at least 10, 15 years into it in order to become like a Japanese person.
Yeah, who often forgets kanji, yeah, and can't write them and mixes them up with other kanji and is confused and annoyed about the whole thing.
Yes, just think about like all these kids who go through at least 12 years of schooling being forced to write kanji all day, every day, being forced to just being surrounded by kanji all this time and still forgetting. And you only invest an hour a week and you really expect to learn after just a year? Come on now.
Yeah, yeah.
It just takes time. So don't get discouraged about it. Just hopefully you can find a way to enjoy learning kanji.
Yeah, and it's a good way to kind of think about it that way and just imagine any service out there which is trying to tell you learn Japanese in 6 months. Don't trust it.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, you should just call them or like leave a review for their product and just say this is the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
Cuz it's not true.
Right, yeah. Exactly, you know. Yeah.
You got anything else to say?
I don't. I'm spent.
Yeah. Put a fork in me. Okay, thanks for listening to the Guys Learning Japanese podcast. Send your questions to glj@gmail.com. We'll answer your questions on the show.